A Day to be Remembered, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute of Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And wow, does it feel good to be back in studio.
Back live again. Folks, we've had some interesting times in the last couple, 3 weeks, mainly due to my problem, being on the road for pretty much all of the last 3 weeks, and of course in hotels, and of course last week at camp. The vicissitudes of having spotty to no internet coverage that you can rely on to do the highly technical work that we have to do in order to bring this program to you every day. So you've been hearing a lot of our best ofs, but now you're getting even the better of, because we're back live.
Well, for all that technical, we'd never get it done. So,
well, that's
so much for the technical.
But you know what, Charles? I think if we had to pick a day to come back live, today is the day. Because, as everybody knows, today is the celebration of one of the most momentous events in American history. As a matter of fact, if it hadn't been for this event, there probably would be no American history, other than a footnote in some English is that today marks the anniversary of the proclamation of the Declaration of Independence. July 4th, 1776, folks, that's when it all got kicked off. Well, actually, it kicked off earlier with some shooting in 1775 and before. But this was the day that we celebrate when our founding fathers came forth and publicly proclaimed the document that they had signed together to basically say that we were going to separate from Great Britain as a colony, as colonies, and we're going to become independent and sovereign entities. And I say that correctly, Charles, because it wasn't just a single sovereign entity that we were going to become. It was going to be a confederation of 13 sovereign entities.
Well, that's right. And there's a lot of nonsense out there. And it started really early in the Republic with the idea that the colonies seceded as a unit. Well, they did in 1776, but if you read the document very closely, it becomes very clear that they seceded as a unit, as independent units.
Exactly.
If you know what I'm saying. For instance, Virginia seceded from the Union with Great Britain long before, over almost 2 months before the Declaration of Independence. Rhode Island seceded before, North Carolina seceded before. There were a number of declarations of independence before the big one on July 4th. And I say secede because that is the power that and the right that they retained and the power that they used. They seceded from the Union with Great Britain. And secession has gotten a bad reputation, and yet it is an absolute right that has been used at least twice in American history. It was used, of course, in July 4th, 1776, and a lot of people don't understand that it was used again to secede from the Union created by the Articles of Confederation and have us go into the Constitution. The old states had to secede from the old Union, which is why we had ratification by conventions rather than ratification by just a popular vote or by the state legislatures. And we seceded and formed a new union, and people always poo-poo that. And I always say, really? Well, what were the last two states to come into the union, and who was president when they came in? And the answer is North Carolina and Rhode Island. Rhode Island didn't come into the union until George Washington had been president for over a year. And North Carolina didn't come in until George Washington had been president for several months. Those two independent states chose to stay out of the Union and actually chose to stay in the old Union. As far as they were concerned, the Union was still intact. Of course, it only had two members, Rhode Island and North Carolina, and then Rhode Island was left standing alone. And they said, well, this isn't a good place to be, so we'll join up too.
Well, you know, Charles, and it's interesting to think about it because there's a lot of things about this holiday that the American people really just don't know or don't understand because they've not studied it. And that's one of them, is that idea that it wasn't just a unified whole of everybody jumping in together and saying, woohoo, we're in. It was a time frame. We celebrate the 4th of July on the 4th of July, when actually the legal separation from Great Britain occurred 2 days earlier by a vote of the Second Continental Congress, where they voted to approve a resolution of independence. And of course, then the actual document, the declaration itself, was drafted and presented on the 4th. So those are some of the things that if you were in a history trivia contest or doing a history quiz competition that you could get hung up on if you didn't understand your history. But you know what, Chuck? We had talked about this in the sense of what we know from history, but we also know it from the document itself, especially those issues about this idea of the states doing this and separating from Great Britain and retaining their sovereignty, because it's in the document itself. And ladies and gentlemen, most every young schoolboy on up in America, hopefully, maybe with a couple of certain exceptions, including the President of the United States, can quote pretty much from heart the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, or at least the first part of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, which we know says, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator, this is something our President seems to have forgotten to put in there, with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Now, that's probably the vast extent of what people know from the Declaration of Independence. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Chuck and I were blessed last week during Camp American 2012 that we were given a rendition of the entire Declaration of Independence from memory by three children, a family who had come to camp and brought their son and two daughters, and I believe that the older son and the son and the older daughter were what we call full campers, and the younger daughter was fairly young. I think she was about 7 years old. But
I think she's nine.
Okay, maybe she is nine. I thought she was seven. Yeah. But anyhow, between those three children, they sat there at our campfire in that evening with their father playing guitar as background music and quietly in the background. And the three of them recited the entire Declaration of Independence completely from memory. Chuck, I've not seen or heard anything so moving or so impressive in a long time. I don't know about you.
It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful to see these children be able to not just mouth the words, but they were also, they evoked the feeling behind the thing. It was very nicely done. I was very impressed. And what's interesting about this is they know it better than the President of the United States. Because he insists on the section where it says that we're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. He insists upon leaving out the Creator part.
Yeah, those three words seem to trip up his tongue a little bit. By our Creator.
He can't seem to spit those out. Our great Christian president.
I was going to say, this is pretty interesting from somebody who professes to be a Christian who can't seem to remember the Creator.
Yeah, the great Christian president who was trained in a Muslim school in Indonesia can't seem to spit out by our Creator and a large C Creator. Which actually does mean something. The fact is, these children knew it better than the President of the United States, and I have a feeling that they understand the underlying philosophy better than the President of the United States.
I would believe that that's pretty much the case. But you know what, Chuck? The point I was trying to get to, and sorry it took me to get so long to get there, ladies and gentlemen, was that in the document itself, at the very last paragraph in the Declaration of Independence, There's a resolution that says, we therefore, the representatives of the United, now that word is not capitalized, ladies.
That's right.
And that's looking at the construct of our founding documents, and we push this in IOTC when we teach the Institute on the Constitution, is that words matter, and that the style of punctuation and grammar in the 18th century was much different than it was today, that capitalizations were used to emphasize words, and that sometimes it was used to show that their words weren't emphasized when they weren't capitalized when you think they should be. And this is one of them, that the United, small u, United, capital S, States of America, in general Congress, assembled, appealing to the supreme judge of the world. Now, there's another phrase that our president may forget in this document, if he ever tries to memorize it, which I doubt he will. For the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these, now here it is, Chuck, that these United Colonies, and that's capital letter United, capital letter Colonies, are and of right ought to be, here's the kicker, free and independent states. Now, free, independent, and states is all capitalized. Our founders wanted to make sure that people knew what they were talking about, period. Free, independent states, not an amalgam, not a consolidated government, but a confederated government.
We've lost sight of what states mean because in the United States, we tend to look at states as artificial boundaries.
Yes.
In 1776, they did not see them as such. They were no more artificial than any other boundary you could think of, like, for instance, between what we consider the United States and Canada now. Yes, there are places where you can't see really any difference, but the fact is, you step over a line, you run a different country. And that's exactly what was going on in 1776. When you crossed the line from New Jersey into Pennsylvania, you were in a different country, and they viewed it that way.
Yep. That's exactly right. Now, Chuck, before we end up here, and I know we're getting close to the end of our time, I wanted to just remind our listeners that even though we may be in independent countries, that we all have a common bond and a common reason for celebrating. And I think it was best noted in a letter that John Adams, the second president of the United States, wrote to his wife, Abigail. And this is quoted in some other places, but I want to quote it. And remember, July the 2nd was when they actually made the legal vote to separate from Britain. So he says, the second day of July 1776 will be the most memorable epoch in the history of America. Okay, he got that partially right. It was the 4th, we remember. But he says this, and this is what I want people to come away with. I'm apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations, that's us, ladies and gentlemen, as the great anniversary festival. That's why we have the fireworks in the park and the hot dogs and the parades and everything else, because it is a festival. He says it ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance. By what? By fireworks and cotton candy and Cracker Jack, Chuck? No. By solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. This was John Adams, one of the founders, the second president of the United States. And the first and foremost way we're to celebrate this day of deliverance, this memorable epoch in the history of our country, is the solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. That was first and foremost in his mind. And he said also, he said it ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations. We call this fireworks now. From one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward, forevermore. I think John Adams got it right, but we seem to miss, ladies and gentlemen, and this is what we at the Institute for Principled Policy would call you back to, is that first and foremost way we ought to commemorate, and that is with solemn devotion to God Almighty for his deliverance in a time when there seemed like there was no way that 13 stripling, fledgling colonies could, as it says in our Declaration of Independence and why they decided to do this, that they would have to assume among the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them. Chuck, let's remember to always give thanks and to give praise to God for the freedoms we have in this country. And not just make it about waving a flag or shooting off a Chinese-made firework, but remembering where our liberty actually rests.
And with that, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.